What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Creature Feature, a production of iHeartRadio. Today on the show, playtime! It's time to have fun in the sun, or the sea, or, you know, in a rotting carcass or whatever. So, this is probably not news to you. Animals love to play! Dogs fetch balls, cats chase after strings and feathers, rats giggle with glee when you tickle them, birds like to snowboard, spiders like to fool around, and wait, spiders? Today on the show, we're going to talk about all the animals who love to play, and that list is way more extensive than you may think. Mammals, reptiles, and insects, too, have been caught just screwing around and acting like idiots for the hell of it. Why do animals play? What the hell are they doing with that octopus? Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, can turtles play basketball? So, why do animals play? It's to prepare for adulthood, right? To hone predatory skills, to hone social skills, to learn and get smarter and better. While that may all to a certain extent be true, honestly, there's so many different documented forms of play, and some of them have no clear explanation. In fact, play can be dangerous. Daredevil animals who frolic too hard can injure themselves, just as humans can. So, could play sometimes just be for fun? A side effect of having a conscious brain rather than some kind of way to become a better animal? A few studies have tried to tackle whether play is always beneficial. A 1980 study found that kittens, when equipped with vision-distorting goggles and rendered incapable of playing, were compared with kittens that got to play with toys and romp around and pounce normally, but they grew up to be just as effective as hunting as the kittens who were able to play. So the kittens who were able to play had no observable advantage over the kittens who couldn't play. Furthermore, a meerkat researcher found that, while meerkats are an extremely playful, feisty bunch, the frequency of their play fighting seemed to have no effect on their success at dominance, and who they chose as playmates didn't seem to have an effect on their camaraderie later in life. So could kittens and meerkats play just for fun with no real benefits? Today we'll be looking at all sorts of different forms of play and see that sometimes a fun cigar is just a fun cigar. Joining me today to play in this space is actor, comedian, bird enthusiast, Kimya Vapornia.
Hello, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me.
I didn't even know what the theme was going to be, but I am pumped.
It's a fun one.
Yeah.
We've been doing a lot of gross ones lately. This is a little breather from all the terrible darkness that has been my October spooktacular.
But did you say spider foreplay?
Well, yes. I mean, but if you don't see that as a positive, I don't know what to tell you because we are very spider sex positive on this show.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, I want to start out with something kind of fun. So have you seen that video of the beluga playing with the rugby ball?
That sounds familiar, but I probably a no, just so I can see it.
Let me show it to you, just in case. And it's always worth giving it another look, because it's totally pretty great. So you can see. So it's this guy on a boat in the Arctic, and he's got a rugby ball, and he tosses it, and this beluga just chases after it.
Wow, really goes long.
Really goes long.
And?
Like a dog. Picks it up. Wow. There he's go. He's got it. And then he's, well, okay, he fumbled a little bit, but he's, you know.
He doesn't know the rules. Look, rules this of rugby.
Is, he's a good candidate. He's not. He wasn't strong in his first season, but I think he's gonna. He might shape up to be a real MVP next year.
Right. He's got the raw talent, but he has no idea how to play the game.
Right. Exactly. I mean, he hasn't. He's not developed as a team. He's developed as an individual, but he's got to learn to play with the boat rather than just playing it for himself.
Totally.
Wow, I'm pretending like I know anything about rugby, but he brings it back to the human. So He's playing fetch.
Basically.
Like, it's basically fetch, and he waits, and then he tosses it again, and then he's going to go after it again. He's clearly, very clearly playing fetch.
What a good boy.
What a good boy.
Or, you know, I don't know. I just always think of, you know, I always think of dogs when in this context, but I'm like, well, they're just all animals that have similar.
Exactly.
I guess that's what we're talking about.
Exactly. So let me give a little background on belugas because they are one of my favorite of the cetaceans. So cetaceans are aquatic mammals, which includes toothed and baleen whales. So that's basically all the sort of flippered mammals you can think of in the ocean, like whales, dolphins, from humpback whales to orcas to little porpoises to dolphins. These are all in the cetacean family. So belugas are toothed whales. So tooth, as you probably have guessed, means teeth.
With teeth.
With teeth, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Instead of those toothbrush teeth.
Except the toothbrush teeth, right. That's baleen. So that, like, that big brushy, like, you know, the like weird eyebrow like
mouth. Yeah, that fish
thing.
Trap.
The fish trap, exactly. broom mouth, as we like to call them in high school.
Okay.
Hey there, broom mouth. So belugas live in the Arctic oceans. They are white or light gray in color, and they have round fleshy bodies. Pretty cute.
Yeah. They look like anything you could mold out of clay.
Yes. they look pretty squidgy and soft.
Mm-hmm.
They're firmer than they look, though. They're, you know, it's blubbery. It's, but yeah. They
sound soft still.
I know, right?
Okay.
They can grow up to 10 to 18 feet long. They weigh from 1,500 to 3,500 pounds. Males tend to be larger than females. They used to be thought to live only about 30 years, but recent evidence suggests that they have similar lifespans to humans.
No way.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Like so up to 100.
100, right, yeah. at least maybe for you, but
yeah.
for me when I toss back like entire canisters of cookies and gummy worms, maybe slightly.
Yeah, but it's not about what you do. It's about how medicine can keep you alive long.
That's
now.
True. That is true. What I do is I'll eat a cookie and then just take a pill.
That's
a random
it.
One, a random medication. I'm sure it'll do something good.
Well, you shouldn't keep it random, but that's fine.
They are unusual amongst whales in that their neck vertebrae are not fused, which means it can turn its head from side to side like a human and other mammals. So think of a dolphin. You're not used to seeing a dolphin kind of swivel its head. It can't do that. But a beluga can. It can. If you call out a beluga, it can like side-eye you. It can turn around and look right in your eyes and be like, who are you calling them blubbery? It's like, just kidding. I know I've got lots of blubber. It's great. I love it. So it is also known as the white whale and the melon head due to the bulbous shape of its head. Sounds like an insult.
Yeah, it does.
But one problem with calling it a melon head is this name has already been taken by another species of dolphin called the melon-headed whale.
Oh, that's so confusing.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So we'll keep calling it the beluga. But
okay.
The reason so many scientists are so eager to call these things melon heads is because their heads are kind of melon-shaped.
Yeah.
And also, the melon is actually the real term for the anatomical feature of cetaceans that help with echolocation. So
their heads are literally called melons?
Yes. Well, it's that head bump. It's not the whole head.
Oh, the
head,
little
but that,
the sensor.
The bumpy head. It's actually not the sensor, but it is. It's a head bump.
Yeah, okay.
It's like
that cartoon bump you get when the anvil falls on your head.
Right, exactly. Whoo! It's the badonkadonk in the front.
There you go.
The front, the head. headbutt.
Yes.
So this is called the melon. It's made mostly out of adipose, which is fatty tissue. It is actually a sound lens, so it helps focus and project echolocation calls, clicks, chirps, and other vocalizations. So it's sort of like a megaphone made out of squishy fat tissue.
Yeah, exciting.
It is, right?
Yeah.
It's like a flesh megaphone.
I wouldn't use one.
Well.
I don't have to.
Well, you can just project naturally. Me,
through
I have
through my mouth, which is a flesh megaphone.
I have a very soft voice. I have to like basically eat the microphone for anyone to hear me. So I could use like a melon micro, like fleshy microphone, a metaphone.
You know, with where medicine is at, I'm sure we can plop one on your face.
I'm sure we can do just plop. The medical term is plopping it onto
yeah.
the face.
After you reach age 100,
right.
they'll give you one.
Right, exactly. I will have a body with just a bunch of random medications and doctors will be like, oh, you know, we didn't think the technique of taking random pills every time you ate a cookie would work, but it turns out you're a medical marvel. You're going to live forever.
Yeah, joke's on everyone else.
Let's put this melon head on you so you can talk louder.
Totally.
So belugas are special amongst the dolphin family in that they can change the shape of their melons at will. They can even wiggle it. It's really funny. It looks like they're just kind of squishing, winking their heads.
I don't know about that.
Squishing it around. What's
okay.
wrong with that?
That's weird. It can change the shape of the thing on its head.
Well, right. It's imagine
you said this wasn't the spooky episode.
No, it's not. It's cute. It's adorable. Imagine you have a fleshy lump on your forehead.
Yeah. I'm already out. I already don't like it.
And then you can wiggle it around
yeah.
by blowing air through your sinuses.
Sure. Let's say I love it.
You would love it.
Okay.
They certainly seem to love it. They do it all the time. So it's thought that this may help focus and modulate their clicks and calls. So they're sort of, it's like the, when, if you, have you ever played an instrument, like a brass instrument or anything
no,
that
I only
uses,
played the keyboard.
I see. Well, great. So I don't have any band geeks to back me up on this one right now, which is sad for me and kind of the story of my life.
Whoops.
But so, yeah, if you change the shape of your lips, that's like the armature of your lips. You can change the way that you're sort of vibrating the
yes.
mouthpiece, and then that creates different sound. They're kind of doing that, but with their
forehead lips.
Forehead lips, right,
mm-hmm.
right, which aren't their actual lips. It's just this protuberance of fatty tissue, exactly. So the beluga is also known as the sea canary due to its bird-like calls. So mariners were able to hear their calls through the holes of their ship, and it actually sounded similar to bird sounds, like a canary singing. So let me play you a little clip that may give you an idea of why they were called the canaries of the sea.
Yes, please.
Kind of like a techno
yeah.
canary.
I know. I was like, there's that tweet tweet in the back, but then there's also all that static and
a canary remix.
Like a robot bird. Yeah.
They also can manage some pretty interesting sounds above the water.
Very different.
That's not quite a canary sound. It's
no.
more of a foghorn sound.
Let's hear a cow.
Let's hear another interesting.
Oh, God.
Yeah, they're pretty good at noises.
It's pretty cool. That's a bird. That's fully a bird.
Yeah, that is not a bird. That is a beluga.
Whoa, he got me.
So they are able to make a lot of really interesting noises. And
very
so
cool.
That's why they're the sea canaries. Or to me, they're more like a sea, huge sea bird that squawks and does techno.
Yeah.
A techno turkey.
Ooh.
So, like many cetaceans, they are highly social. They form cooperative groups or pods, which are typically about 10 individuals big. They will hunt together and seek out interpersonal contact with each other. Some researchers suggest that their unique anatomy encourages even more social contact, meaning so they're, since they can turn their heads, they can look at each other more easily. They, that flexible, malleable melon on their head maybe can direct vocalizations at another individual more easily, so that they may be really anatomically better at socializing with each other.
That's amazing. Are they allowed to talk to other pods or just their own?
No, they will actually coalesce into huge groups of sometimes up to thousands of other beluga, where they are many different pods coming together.
Wow.
And then they will actually sometimes form these nursery groups, which is a bunch of mothers and their babies and adolescents. So mothers will form triads with, like, they'll have a baby and then an adolescent and the mom, and they do this child care together. But then sometimes they will form big nursery group, like mommy playdates with other,
yes,
other mothers. And there's this positive pro-social interaction between the mothers. Sometimes they'll just, like, voluntarily be midwives for each other. So that means helping the new mother lift up the newborn calf to the surface to take its first breath, which is a really critical time because they are mammals. They have to breathe the air. And so the calf is not strong enough to swim to the surface. So you have to physically lift it up. And so all these moms will come together, help each other lift their calves up to take their first breath.
This is beautiful.
It really is. And then the adolescents will babysit and learn how to raise the young. So it's really adorable. It's actually really cool, beautiful form of pro-social behavior.
That's fantastic.
And their whistles is a form of communication. They also echolocate. So a lot of the clicks are just, I'm trying to see my environment. So you know how basically echolocation works. You send out a click, it bounces off, comes back. They have these huge sort of visual cortex processing centers where it's like, or not visual, sorry, auditory processing centers where they can interpret, see their environment through this echolocation.
Yeah.
It's really cool. But then they will also make weird squeaks and stuff, and that seems to be communicating with each other, basically talking, making out alarms, you know, a form of some kind of beluga form of speech that goes like, "Wah!"
Right.
And then cute whistles.
Beluga jokes.
it's like, what do you call two melon heads together?
What?
A picnic.
A squawk squawk.
That's a really terrible joke. But in my defense, I think it's true to what a beluga joke would be.
Probably.
Right. And belugas are highly playful. So they will rub up against each other, chase each other, or sometimes they spit water at each other just for fun.
How exciting.
And they will also spit water at humans, by the way. So if you're if there is a beluga in captivity for some reason and it's like you're walking around, sometimes they'll just spit a jet of water at you.
Just because they want to play?
Because they want to play. Yeah. Maybe they want to annoy you, but hey.
Spit water back in their face? Should I do that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, just spit at them.
Cool.
See what happens if you're at a zoo and you do that.
Yeah, I'll get kicked out of the zoo.
They also like to play with sea junk that they find, like plants, wood, like driftwood, buoys, trash. One even was observed carrying around a dead reindeer skeleton just out of curiosity.
That's the weird one. No one talks to that beluga.
I found a new toy. Okie dokie.
Oh, yeah. We're going to go play over here.
We're going to make more bad melon jokes over here.
Oh, my God. Glad we got away from that guy.
But, you know, that's probably why this beluga was caught on video playing rugby, because it's part of its natural behavior is playing around with objects. And I do really believe it was smart enough to figure out that if I bring this rugby ball back to the human, they're going to throw it and it'll be fun.
Yeah.
They're highly social, highly intelligent. Mm-hmm. I think that often you'll see a video and it's like, oh, and am I anthropomorphizing too much? Like, in this case, I think sometimes the desire to not anthropomorphize too much actually flips the other direction, and we don't do it enough. We think that everything an animal does has some kind of practical function rather than just, maybe it's just having fun.
Yeah.
And so it's, as I said, it's very similar to how dogs play fetch. So I actually wanted to look into more, why do dogs play fetch, and how did that behavior come about? So wolves aren't great at fetch, which I think is interesting. So we've definitely bred dogs to be better at playing fetch. Obviously, sometimes we've selected for that behavior in particular, like with Labrador retrievers.
It's in the name.
It is in the name. But one of the theories for why they're so playful in general, including fetch, is that they have retained juvenile traits, like puppy-like traits, and we've selected for the more juvenile puppy-like dogs.
So we did this to the dogs?
We did this to the dogs. We made dogs.
Right.
Dogs,
from wolves.
Registered trademark dogs.
Yeah.
Copyright.
What?
Dogs.
Oh, right.
Patent pending dogs.
Okay.
We made dogs.
Yeah, I understand.
So what's interesting is that wolf puppies show a great capacity for playing fetch. So if you can train a wolf puppy how to play fetch, but a wolf adult, they're not as playful as puppies.
Out of it. Too mature.
Right, exactly. Too mature, too cool.
Yeah.
Like, fetch, huh? Yeah, I used to play that.
You did that.
Now I'm into I'm into, you know.
Sitting here.
I'm into Ace of Base, Devo.
That's better, yeah.
But with dogs, we have potentially bred in these traits that are called neoteny, which is basically dogs being kids forever. So neotenous traits means a juvenile trait that lingers on in an adult. So some of the common neotenous traits in dogs is floppy ears, shorter muzzles, smaller size, large eyes and ears, big round foreheads, kind of generally puppy-like looks.
Yeah. We did all this.
We did.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we bred dogs not just to have juvenile behaviors, more friendliness, more playfulness, but sometimes we selected for those juvenile physical traits because we find them cute.
Sure.
It fits into the baby schema of, you know, the eye to forehead ratio where you have this big forehead, big eyes, and to us, that just strikes us as cuter. And sometimes juvenile physical traits like floppy ears just happen to be attached to more friendly behavior. Like, so ear cartilage in a lot of domesticated animals gets weaker when you select for less aggression, which is really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the juvenile behaviors of wolf puppies is more playfulness. So with dogs, it's almost like they are just eternal puppies.
Like Peter Pan.
Exactly.
Peter Pan syndrome dogs.
Exactly. Got yeah. It. So in terms of like playing and fetching and retrieving, we also did that, by making them eternal children. We made fetch happen.
I guess I don't know how to feel about it, but I guess it's fine.
Yeah.
I have a dog. I like dogs.
Yeah.
What to think that they didn't exist until we decided to make them this way?
We wanted to make fetch happen, so we made fetch happen.
Ha.
Yeah, my dog isn't good at fetch, though, so I don't know what that means. She's only good at it if you have treats.
To bring back the thing you threw?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
my dog doesn't do that.
No. She wants something out of it, which is really sad. I thought that she was more pure of heart, but she's a cold-blooded capitalist. She looks at me. She has the toy. She's like, well, and now I expect a transaction of treats to dog.
Yeah, I mean, that's a smart dog.
Yeah, it's a smart dog, but is it a fun dog?
It's the dog of now.
It's 2019. Dogs are no longer fun.
Capitalist dogs.
Capitalist dogs.
They know too much now.
She's running for president.
Oh, yeah? I'll vote. I don't know who I'm voting for, so I'll vote
for your dog. So if play is sometimes just for fun and a characteristic of young animals, does it really serve no purpose? One way to approach this question is to look into why humans play. It's easier to know why we want to play, since we understand our own feelings reasonably well. Playing is fun. But there is something about play that may be beneficial to humans. Many child behavioral researchers emphasize the importance of play for children in cognitive, social, and emotional development. It's not that play makes children better at hunting or better at dominating social hierarchies. It just gives them a more enriching emotional life and makes them happier, more well-adjusted, and healthier. And for animals, when playtime isn't just honing a certain skill, maybe it's simply enriching their emotional lives. Animals, after all, can get bored, especially when they're taken out of their natural environment. When we return, we'll talk about some animals you wouldn't even think are capable of playing, and some curious little creatures who use playtime to cope with being abducted to a very strange, alien environment. We'll be right back.
Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Being a young adult, remember all those times you went out on a limb to try and meet someone new, maybe even find someone to go out with. All that awkwardness as you fumblingly talk to a beautiful stranger with long, slender legs, curves in all the right places, beautiful, shimmering eyes, glistening hair, elegant, meaty chelicerae, and soft, beckoning pedipalps. She's a stunning, single spider, and she's wrapped her long forelimbs around you. She's been flirting with you all night, and she playfully puts your head in her fangs and whispers, "Call me sometimes, we can mate, and I'll rip your head off and eat it for real that time."
I didn't like any of that.
Well, sorry to say that researchers at the University of Tennessee have observed a tangleweb spider playfully flirting with each other. So this is the, I think it's pronounced Anolosimus studiosus.
That sounds right to me, yeah.
Yeah, and it is a type of, these are tiny little spiders who build clumpy tangled webs. That's why they're called tangleweb spiders.
Oh, are these the ones that I've seen on like Twitter where people are like, check this out, and it looks like a little fluff ball, and then they poke
those
it and
are,
a million spiders come out?
I don't think so.
Okay, because those videos are terrifying.
Yeah, let me just say, they do live in North and South America, so you may encounter these at some point living in America.
Very fun for me.
So within the same species, they can be social or asocial. So social individuals live in communal groups. So I don't think these are the ones that form the big clumps.
Yeah.
But they are sometimes found in big groups.
Okay.
So, yeah. But they're nice little guys, so don't be too concerned.
I should say bugs are a fear of mine, so yeah. I'm just gonna be this way through this spider section.
Well, let's see if I can't seduce you to like spiders.
Okay.
So the social individuals live in these small groups. Asocial ones are kind of, as you would predict, aggressive to newcomers, don't really like interacting with people, really like posting memes of the Joker online. And it's thought that the social phenotype developed in response to harsher environments, so that made communal living a more viable survival strategy. And these social spiders of this species have also been observed flirting. Okay. So you may wonder, how do spiders flirt?
That is what I wonder.
Yes. So juvenile females and males will engage in mock copulation, or essentially dry humping.
Dry humping,
yeah. Dry humping. Mm-hmm. The females are not yet sexually mature, so they can't reproduce. There's 0 point to pretending to mate because they can't.
Sure.
But they still engage in the behavior. Mm. Just sort of grinding against each other.
And that's the flirt part?
Yeah.
They go straight for the dry hump.
Straight for the dry hump. They do not leave room for Spider Jesus. It's a disgrace, and I don't know where their chaperones are.
Ugh, come on.
But what's interesting is it's not just they're too stupid to understand that they're not ready for sex, because the females seem to understand that this is not actual sex.
Yeah.
And we know this because they don't eat the male's head after they do the dry humping.
Oh, so that's for real.
It's a real connection, when you've made a true sexual connection and you have been intimate as a spider, you eat the dude's head.
You're supposed to sway me to like spiders. This is spooky.
But it's a commitment. It's an ultimate commitment.
You're right.
Well, okay, to be fair to spiders, there's only about a 30% chance that they're going to eat the male's head. So when researchers looked at the playful, flirtatious humping, they found that the females never ate the male spider's head, which I think is really polite of them. It's like, you know, this was just a dry run. This is a test run. I'm not going to, you know, kill you during the practice game, but in the finals, you'll probably get your head eaten. But that's fine, because that's the for real one.
Yeah.
That's the real show. That's the real performance.
Mm-hmm. Is it because then the eggs are laid inside the body that's left over?
No.
Oh, my God.
No.
Now you've got me going crazy.
I mean, there are many insects that do lay their eggs inside the bodies of prey items, but this is just a case in which the idea is that when females do eat the heads of the males, it may help increase the viability of their eggs, so that extra snack that they get is good for them, good for the survival rate of their eggs. Yeah.
Okay.
But they don't, I mean, come on, don't be gross. They don't lay their eggs in the bodies of their victims.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm being gross.
They're not like the tarantula wasp that paralyzes tarantulas and then lays their larva on the tarantula and the larva eats its way outside of the tarantula as it develops. Come on, Kimia.
Come on.
Don't
yeah,
be,
I wish
don't
you didn't
be weird.
Know that. Okay.
Well, okay, so you look really uncomfortable, so I think we will move on from spiders.
Hey, that flirting was cute.
It was adorable. Just wink, 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 wink. All the eyes keep winking.
Oh, my God. That's real spider flirting.
So let's talk about geckos in space. Space.
Okay.
Space. Space. Geckos in space. Mm-hmm. So, did you know there are space geckos hovering above us, maybe even at this moment?
No.
Well, there are. So, geckos are a much studied animals in unmanned spacecraft because researchers are really interested in seeing how they manage that Spider-Man trick of climbing up walls.
Oh.
So, geckos, as you may know, are really good at climbing up stuff.
Yeah.
And like really sheer surfaces. So they can even climb up glass. If you've ever owned a gecko, you know they sometimes can climb up the glass tank. Kimia, come on.
I'll go out and get a gecko and a bunch of spiders.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to go, yes, and I'll get a bunch of geckos and spiders.
Yeah, yes, and I will.
So a specific species of gecko was studied. So I'm going to talk about the Turner's thick-toed gecko. it's got those thick toes, though.
Two C's. Thick-toed.
Mm-hmm, double T's. So these are a species of gecko who are found in southern Africa and also in space. Space, space. So scientists have long been curious about how geckos manage to climb up walls. And researchers have sort of think they may have pinned it down to van der Waals forces. So I got to preemptively say I'm not a physicist, so this is slightly out of my wheelhouse, but I'm going to try to explain van der Waals force.
Can't wait.
It is an attraction or repulsion between molecules over very short distances. So the way that maybe geckos are able to use van der Waals forces is they have these microscopic hairs on their toe pads that interact with the molecules on the surface that they're climbing. So these little tiny, tiny hairs have these little molecules that get really close to the molecules on the surface that they're climbing up, and then these weak van der Waals forces make it stick together, and then you just multiply that by there's so many hairs on their foot that they're able to stick.
So this is just like so small, something that's so teensy.
Yeah.
You'd never be able to see it.
Yeah, I mean, you can probably see it under like an electron microscope.
Well, yes. Okay.
Yeah. But like, you know, like in the Spider-Man movies where you see Spider-Man and he's got like his fingers, he like looks at his fingers and these tiny hairs like poke out of his fingers. It's kind of like that.
That's great.
Yeah. Researchers are, of course, interested in seeing whether they can still do this in space. So they put geckos in space, essentially. Long story short, we shot them into space.
We couldn't just keep them down here in those fake space, you know, atmosphere thingies.
We don't. What?
We spent all the money to toss them into space.
I don't think we have. We don't have.
Those anti-gravity space chambers?
Wait. Kimia.
What?
We don't have those officially on the record.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's we got to cut this all out of the podcast so we don't get the FBI's just busting down our door. The Area 41. Area 42?
51. There you go.
Okay.
See, you don't even know.
Well, no, the thing is, they want you to focus on Area 51.
Well, what's going on in 41 and 42?
41 and 42, that's where it's actually happening.
Oh, no.
Gecko aliens. So, in fact, they found that geckos can climb walls in space. So great, cool. But they also found something else. They found that geckos like to play games in space. So
only in space.
In space. So on board the Bion M1 unmanned spacecraft, Turner's thick-toed geckos were caught playing around in zero gravity, which is a great headline. I'm very good at headline writing, apparently.
That is good.
What happened is one of these space geckos wriggled out of its collar and went rogue and was just floating around like a little stinker. And it was holding its collar and just kind of like the collar floated away because they're in low gravity.
Sure.
And the gecko started playing with this floating collar. They would boop it with their nose.
I see.
Kind of push it around. One gecko tried putting it on. Tried to put his head through it. One of them tried pinning it to the floor and then like releasing it and seeing what happens.
Oh, they're just experimenting.
They're just playing, yeah.
That's fun.
Who's the real scientist? The scientists or the geckos?
Still the scientists.
Well, but they're doing
experiments
on their collar for fun.
I'm also imagining that they are all having little tiny bubble helmets over just their heads.
There's just like some kind of like science noise beeping in the background, and one of them has a little helmet and they're just like floating around.
Exactly.
Essentially, that's what's happening.
Right.
I mean, it's zero gravity, but it's not zero oxygen, so they're probably fine.
That's fair. Less cute.
But yeah, no, they do have little tiny spacesuits.
Oh, good.
Little tiny NASA patches on.
Yes.
And when they're getting on the spacecraft, it's just this slow walk of geckos with a little helmet under their arms. And they're like, dun, 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 dun.
Yep.
And like a little gecko is like, oh, I'm so worried about my gecko husband.
Oh, I hope they don't forget about me. That's it. Ready. 3, 2, 1, blast off.
The gecko's like, just like their face is going.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All the space things. It's like, Houston, we have a problem. There's just a gecko turd floating around.
Oh my gosh. That was real though, when people went up into space.
Yeah, where do they poop?
They poop in bags.
I know.
And
well,
then
I don't
sometimes
know that,
they float around.
Yeah, I
read about this.
I know they had to poop somewhere, and it must have been in, you know?
They poop in baggies and dehydrate them at times, and then.
And like, well, the bag, right, there was an incident where, like, the poop baggies accidentally got released.
Yes, and that you can, there's like a recording, I think it was on an Apollo flight, where they're joking about poops flying around. Anyway, someone fact check that.
It's like, oh, is this dehydrated? Whoop. Nope,
oh,
it's not.
Gross.
It's not ice cream. It's not ice cream, you guys. So, how do we know that these geckos are playing? Like, well, I mean, we
to be fair, we don't. Like, we can't get inside the brain. We can't avatar inside a gecko brain yet. Sure. But there's a good chance it is play based on some of the criteria that we've made for, like, what is play versus another behavior. So Mark Bekov is a behavioral ecologist at the University of Colorado Boulder who talked to Discover magazine and said that even though play is difficult to define, it can fit a few criteria. So he said, quote, play is a kaleidoscope, a mix of different behaviors from lots of different contexts, like predatory behavior, aggressive behavior, sexual behavior, and it's this mix that allows animals to know that it's play and not something serious. So play is loosely defined as being fitting this mix of criteria. So being voluntary, there's no obvious practical function. It's different from practical functions. It can be repetitive. It can be predatory, sexual, aggressive, or a mix of these behaviors. Mm. And the animal playing is not distressed, and it's for the most part healthy. And then if you kind of hit most of those criteria or see a combination of those things, there's a good chance that that qualifies as basically playing. Because what else is it going to be?
Yeah, I don't know.
We've talked about this on the show before, but octopuses will play. They like to, so there's a...
They're super smart, though, yeah.
They're very smart, yeah. Yes. You should check out the Aliens Under the Sea episode.
Oh, it's yes.
We have a guy who lived with an octopus in his living room and made friends with it. He's like an octopus researcher.
That's amazing.
And they're incredibly smart. They have been seen playing with... So these researchers put an empty pill bottle in their aquarium, and so it's buoyant and it floated around, and the octopuses were... playing fetch with themselves. So they were letting the bottle like float out, and then it like would like push it with a stream of water, and then it would float back, and then it'd push it again. So it was playing ball.
Very fun.
And also turtles, surprisingly. Now, what's interesting is some of these animals that we're talking about are not super intelligent. So obviously, spiders basically almost don't have a brain. They have like a cluster of neurons that is almost like hard to describe as being like a fully functional brain.
Yeah, sure.
And yet they still do this interesting mimicking behavior.
Yes, you're so crazy.
And so turtles are obviously more complex than spiders, but they are not maybe as intelligent as like a beluga or an octopus, but they still engage in play. So in the 1980s, there was this African soft-shelled turtle living in the National Zoo in D.C., and his name was Pigface. I'll show you a picture so you understand why. They have really weird snouts, so little pointy snouts.
I love that.
Yeah, they're not unlike hard-shelled turtles where they have this distinct hard shell. They are squishy boys.
Squishy boys.
Squishy boys.
We're allowed to call this animal squishy.
Yes.
Great.
This is definitely squishy. Yeah, it's like a lumpy turtle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
With a pointy nose, and they are pretty funny looking, and they have pretty long necks. And unfortunately, Pigface was having some behavioral problems. It kept clawing at itself, scratching its own face.
Oh.
And zookeepers were very concerned. And the common knowledge at the time was like, well, turtles can't be bored, so we don't know why it's doing this.
Well, he's literally ripping his face off from boredom.
Then, and then the zookeeper was thinking, well, you know, I think he could be bored, actually, because he seems pretty bored.
Whoa.
And so they gave him a couple of basketballs to play with. And at first, it didn't seem like he was doing much with the basketballs.
Official size?
You know what? I don't know.
Okay.
For turtles, maybe.
Okay.
For the Turtle Basketball Association,
mm-hmm.
the TBA.
TBA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they recorded, they set up a camera to record and see what it would do with these basketballs. And when they were reviewing the footage, at first it didn't really seem like much, but then they sped it up to watch the whole thing. And then once they saw it at this higher speed, it was very clearly playing with a ball like a little puppy.
Whoa, they don't do slow-mo replay.
Right, exactly.
Fast-mo.
Fast-mo. Mm-hmm. Because the turtle isn't a fast animal. It's not like a puppy that sprints around, but then when you speed it up to basically what the animal's activity level is, it was playing with it. He was frolicking around, booping it with his nose, having a good time. And I think it was a real testament to this idea that, first of all, even animals we don't give that much credit for being intelligent can still be bored, can still need stimulation and enrichment, especially if they're not in if they're in a tiny enclosed environment.
I always think about that. But yeah, those animals that are like being rehabilitated in zoos or just have grown up in zoos, where I'm like, what are you guys doing? It's a small space. You just right. swim this way and then you go right. that way and yeah. that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I have a friend who she would go around the world and try to teach people about animal enrichment, especially in captivity and rehabilitation programs, because it's really important that people understand, even if you provide for all of their needs, yeah. like food, shelter, a good amount of space, if you don't give them entertainment, social stimulation, and all, and these other kind of just like fun games to play, yeah. they'll get bored and they'll start to exhibit neurotic behavior. That's really a sign of bad things happening.
Oh, man.
Like polar bears will pace a lot. They'll like overgroom themselves, and then when they introduce more toys and more social interactions, then those kinds of those little behaviors of kind of almost like OCD like behaviors stop yeah. happening.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to understand how playful animals are, not just because it's cute and fun, but because it impacts like how we actually treat them.
Yeah, they need it.
Yeah, they need it. Just one fact: rats who get tickled giggle.
What?
It doesn't sound like human giggles, but researchers found that when rats would get tickled, which they love, by the way, they love getting tickled.
They do?
They would run around. They had these squeals that were specifically associated with getting tickled.
Okay, well, but I thought tickling was bad. Like when humans get tickled, isn't it your body freaking out? That's why you laugh? This is what I heard.
I mean, I don't know.
Like, your body tenses up and it's like natural reaction is to like laugh, but you're just like panicking so much you don't know what to do.
Well, I think everyone responds to tickles differently, right?
Okay.
I mean, it is true. Like there are some theories about laughing being about like being so overstimulated that yeah. you just don't know how to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly tickling can be really unpleasant, but, you know, it kind of, I think in the rat's case, at least, it wasn't like they weren't finding the worst spot and then tickling it relentlessly and then holding its head down and being like, why are you tickling yourself?
Sure. You heard about this, the rats driving cars, about how rats like to drive?
They like to drive. And that's, I think what's interesting about that is that's another instance of play.
Yeah.
Because they don't need to drive. Mm-hmm. They just enjoy it. So they made these little vehicles for rats, and they could learn how to drive them to get through a maze. But they found that even when the vehicles offered no actual advantage for the rats, like didn't help them with anything, they still seemed to really enjoy learning how to drive
yep.
and going around honking at each other, going like, "Whoa, and you cut me off."
It brought down their like stress levels and anxiety, which is the opposite of how I feel when I'm driving.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, I think that originally, probably the first people who drove, like when cars first came out.
They were like, this is the best.
Right, like Cars 1.0, the start of cars.
That's true.
It was probably really fun because nobody was around. So for these rats, like for now, it's great,
they're loving it.
But wait until it's an actual traffic jam,
uh-huh.
a real rat race, if uh-huh. you know what I mean. See if it's fun then when you got to get to work and there's some guy ahead who's got his blinker on for a mile. And,
yeah, totally.
Yeah. So they have it. They think they've got it so good now.
At least for now.
Instead of automated driving, like driverless cars.
I hear where you're
rats
going.
Rats driving the cars. So they have fun.
Yeah.
We get to not drive the cars. Many will die. However, isn't it worth a shot?
It is. Call Google. Siri, dial Google.
I know what burning question you have. Could dinosaurs have enjoyed playing? Could a T-Rex have romped around playing with some poor dead Triceratops' skull? Some evidence suggests that yes. So let's look at crocodiles. Now, crocodiles didn't descend from dinosaurs, but they're about as old. They evolved 200 million years ago during the Mesozoic era, and crocodiles love to play. Biologists at the University of Tennessee at Knoxville have studied the play behaviors of crocodilians using over 3,000 hours of observation. Their play behavior includes tossing around a ball, blowing bubbles in the water, snapping playfully at streams of water, carrying around bright flowers, and giving each other piggyback rides.
But what about the direct descendants of dinosaurs? That's right, I'm talking about birds! Birds love to play, as many bird owners may already know. Even the more serious-seeming birds love a good time. Birds of play, like screech owls, will pounce on leaves or, in captivity, cat toys. Corvids, which is crows and ravens, love to play with all sorts of shiny objects, and a crow was caught on camera in Russia taking a metal lid to the top of a snowy rooftop, sitting on it and sledding down, only to repeat the process again and again. Black swans have been videoed surfing the waves, flying out onto the beach, finding a wave that's just cresting, surfing it to the shore, and repeating the process. I'm definitely including links to these videos in the show notes. Seriously, check them out and tell me with a straight face that these birds aren't having a heckin' good time. So here's the crow snowboarding. He's gone to the top of the roof, snowboards down, picks up the lid. Gets back up there and does it again. And the great thing about being a snowboarding crow is you don't need a skila.
No way. No wait times.
You can just fly right back. No wait times. You can just fly back up and he's going to do it again. Ah, yeah.
He's just having a good time there.
Ride that powder, dude.
Yes.
Yes, that's some good. He got some good air there.
It takes a lot because he's also using his wings. So yeah. It's like a skill.
Yeah,
it's,
it is.
Crowboarding.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what it said on the video.
Oh.
I didn't come up with that.
Well, it's a good one anyway.
Gotta credit that vid.
Here's some swan surfing. So here's a group of black swans going out into the ocean. They find a good wave, surf it back to shore. And then what's incredible is it doesn't seem like it's just a mistake because then they fly back out to find another wave.
Again.
Gotta try that again.
Yeah, bro, catch the wave. Oh, nice.
Tubular, dude.
Good swell.
In fact, it seems more likely that most animals engage in some form of play, whether it's locomotion playing like enjoying sledding or surfing or crowboarding, play behaviors and pretend flirtations, but there can be a dark side to playing. When we return, we'll learn that Mother Nature lets you play with your food, and sometimes your food plays back.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Imagine you're strolling along on a nice day. The sun is shining, the birds, well, that's weird. The birds have stopped singing. Something is off. You feel a deep trembling, something rising from the ground. Suddenly, a huge appendage rises from beneath you, tearing apart the ground. It scoops you up and tosses you high into the air. You fall down, expecting to meet a quick end, but that's when you land on something soft and fleshy. You come to the horrible realization that this giant monster has caught you on its appendage. Well, this is it. Hopefully getting eaten won't suck as bad as you thought it would. But then you feel the air whoosh around you as you're tossed again high into the air. So high the air thins and you can barely breathe. You land again with a thud into the monster's grasp. You're pretty sure most of your bones are broken at this point. And again, it tosses you. Why doesn't it kill you? What is this? Some kind of sick game? And that's when you realize it is a game and you're the ball.
Oh, no.
Yeah, isn't that spooky?
That one's spooky, too. These are all spooky. You tricked me. I'm sorry.
This is if you can believe it, this is a less spooky episode.
I believe it.
The other ones have a lot of parasites and, you know, disembowelment.
Let's say no more.
Although, speaking of disembowelment, Kimmy, I want to welcome you to the life of a fish who is unlucky to encounter nature's most adorable asshole, the dolphin.
Uh-huh.
So, dolphins love to yeet fish right out of the water.
Okay.
Dolphins have this hunting strategy where they will forcefully kick a fish out of water with their flipper. And when the fish is stunned, obviously, after flying through the air and smacking onto the water.
Yeah, someone just kicked you out of the
water.
Right,
exactly. It's like someone just threw you into the air.
Oh, my goodness.
You can't breathe.
Nope.
Right. So the dolphins will take advantage of these shocked fish and then eat them because they're horrible monsters.
Those little assholes. Everyone loves a dolphin. They're so mean.
But what's interesting is they don't just do this to hunt. So they will also play with their food after they've already caught it. Dolphins have been observed tossing fish over and over again before eating them. And it's speculated that sometimes this is practical, so they may be making sure that the fish or octopus that they caught or whatever prey item is truly dead so that they can swallow it without choking, which is a pretty reasonable thing to do.
Okay.
But sometimes they just do it because they can, and it doesn't seem to have any real practical purpose. And so, as we talked about before, that would qualify it as play.
Yeah.
Dolphins have been observed playing ball with things they have no intention of eating. Sometimes dolphins have been observed dragging seagulls under the water, dunking them, playing around with them a few times before releasing them unharmed but super frazzled.
I think we can't say play, and we need to call this bullying.
Dolphin bullying.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess it is. They are essentially giving the birds swirlies, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. They're the big man on campus, bunch of footballers playing around,
yeah.
Dead fish, dunking on seagulls.
Hey, nerd bird. And yank him underwater. Dang.
So they also like to pull and tug on turtle tails and legs, which is super mean.
Yep. Yeah, unless they got a crush on those turtles. I'll give them a little tug.
I don't like you. I'm just... Shut up.
Shut up. I'm going to chase you, though. Not because I like you.
They will even stalk sharks and mimic their movements. Wow, the more we talk about
these bullies.
Are jerk teenagers, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at me. I'm a shark.
Oh, I'm a shark. I'm a shark.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave me alone. Look at me. I'm a shark.
Yeah.
I don't have bones. I got cartilage. Duh.
See, you're good at this.
Maybe I was a dolphin in a past life.
I think so.
Dolphin bully. And orcas, who are actually members of the dolphin family, like to go shark tipping. They will flip over sharks, which makes them really easy to torment and eat, because when sharks are tipped over, they go into this state of catatonia where they don't move. They just kind of
like sheep?
Like sheep, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's kind of like cow tipping, but with sharks, and sometimes they do eat them also.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
The dolphins eat the
orcas will eat the sharks.
Oh, orcas. We're on orcas now.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Well,
yeah.
Orcas are
Orcas
they
are
actually a dolphin.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm thinking of, you know, the black and white whale.
Yes, yeah, yes, yes.
But it's a dolphin.
And dolphins are whales.
Understood.
It's confusing.
Yeah, but they're all called, what was that first category? No, those are just
cetaceans.
The whales. Yes, yes, yes.
So toothed whales are mm-hmm. dolphins and other toothy whales, and orcas are in the dolphin family.
We'll remember this, yeah.
Yes, so dolphins are whales, orcas are whales, orcas are also dolphins, and yes.
Cool.
So this actually reminds me a lot of cats, like how cats will play with their prey.
Oh, yeah, they're flicking their food around all the time.
So I had a cat when I was growing up. She's a real, real sweet cat, but just a vicious killer. Would kill, probably, you know, killed off a few rare bird species in her lifetime.
Wow.
She was very good at catching mice and birds. She loved to come up to our back door, which was a clear glass mm-hmm. door, and you could look out and she saw us, and she'd have a dead mouse, and she'd like, this was her little stage,
oh,
and she'd
boy.
Put on a theater show, and she would toss this mouse up, disembowel it, just a confetti
oh
of blood and guts, and she was she'd look at me to make sure I was watching as she tore this mouse to shreds, and she had so much fun. And I think she was probably, this is sort of a maternal or social behavior where she's thinking like, I'm going to show you how it's done.
Yeah.
And had a really good time. But I think it was also just fun for her.
It sounds like Benihana. It makes me think of like a cat
you're
teppanyaki
right,
chef
right.
that's just like sets, flipping it around.
Does that little onion volcano, but it's made out of dead mice.
Exactly.
So, like dolphins, cats may play with their prey partially to kill it and disable it so that it doesn't hurt them. So it makes them easier to eat. It prevents them from scratching them. But it's probably, I think, also really fun. I mean, cats also play with toy mice for
yeah.
no purpose. They seem to really enjoy it. Did you see that video of that cat that ran out onto the football field?
No.
Oh, that was okay.
You gotta link that.
So here's the oh. cat running out onto the field. Just it's so funny. So it's this huge black cat. It's a real chonker, and he or she, I don't know who this cat is, but runs out onto the field and looks momentarily stunned as thousands of people look on.
Oh my gosh, this is a cat's nightmare.
I mean. But do you think the cat is, do you think this is like a cat form of streaking, or do you think the
yeah,
cat
one of those
made a mistake?
Cat, one of that cat's buddies was like, I bet you can't do this. I bet you wouldn't run naked across the football field.
Yeah, I would, guys.
Totally would. Watch me. Just watch me.
I wonder, or do you think the cat was like looking for the bathroom, made a wrong turn, and suddenly it's in the middle of the stadium
shoot.
And it's like, oh, kibbles and bits.
Shoot, shoot, shoot. Just keep running. No one will see you. Just keep running and everyone saw you. Well, they're all looking.
So one thing that I think is really interesting is that big cats like lions, leopards, tigers, all those big mm-hmm. old furry death machines are basically just big cats. They're a lot like domesticated cats
yeah.
and vice versa. So big cats love to play with their food as well. And it is truly psychotic. So there was a video of a leopard caught who was dismembering a warthog corpse. I mean, which is, that's normal
sure.
So far, so good. It's butchering this warthog corpse to eat it.
Cool.
Normal leopard stuff. But then it picks up the warthog's jawbone and uses the jawbone to stir around its own carcass. So it's like it's basically mutilating this warthog just for fun.
This is so got, icky.
Right. It's like, huh, it's got this jawbone. It's like, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself?
Oh, no.
Really psychopathic behavior.
Truly.
And, right. And it doesn't seem to serve any, like some people were wondering, oh, is this tool use or something? It's
oh,
like,
yeah.
no. It didn't serve any purpose. It didn't accomplish anything. It was just like, wonder what happens if I shove this in here. It's like, yep, art.
That's that. Art, yeah.
Art. I've made art. And big cats will also play with their prey while they are still alive. Often a big cat like a lion will catch something small like a little antelope or other ungulate. And once the prey is tired and stops running, sometimes the prey will just like go into this state of catatonia, where it will lie down and stop trying because it's so exhausted.
Yeah.
And this is actually not a bad technique always, because if you don't have any more energy to run, your best bet is to lie down, hope that there is a break in the cat's attention so that you can make a dash for it once you've recollected yourself.
So hard to be an animal.
But once the prey has calmed down, sometimes like when it's just stopped running and it's just laying there kind of like dumbstruck, the cat will play around with it, like kind of smack it around, put a big paw on it. They'll even groom it sometimes.
This is sick.
I know, right? And they can appear really gentle, like, oh, I'm now adopting this little antelope.
This is scary. This is so spooky. That's to be like, hello, my pretty. Oh, no, I'm just taking care of you. I'm just going to give you a little brush. It's like, looks so good. Oh,
it's like that it's Split, that Shyamalan.
I didn't see it. M. Night Shyamalan multiple personalities movie.
Yeah, with what's that actor's name? James McAvoy?
Yeah.
McAvoy? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You knew all the info.
I know. I just play stupid about movies. But no, he's got these multiple personalities, and one of his a few of his personalities are crazy, actually, but one of them wants to kidnap and eat these girls.
I'm not going to see this movie.
I didn't watch it either, but
okay.
What I like to do is there are movies I'm too scared to see, too spooked to see.
So
but
you read up.
I read it up. I read it on Wikipedia because mm-hmm. I'm curious, but I don't actually want to see it because
totally.
I am a weenie.
Yes.
And so he catches these girls, and then one of his personalities is like this sweet grandma or sweet mother, and he starts like braiding their hair and says, I made you a sandwich.
I don't like those.
Made you a sandwich. Oh, you have such pretty hair. It's basically what these lions are doing. Yes. So most of the time, once they get bored or hungry, then they just kill the prey item.
Oh,
it's just
my
so
gosh.
It's such a jerk thing. It's like, well, I'm bored now.
And so as long as you're a very entertaining prey.
Right. It's like wait, I can juggle.
Cartoon Lion King was accurate when Scar had Zazu trapped and he was like, oh, I'll sing you a song. Oh, watch me dance.
That movie has a lot of inaccuracies, but that's the one that is correct. Exactly. Lest you think that it's just male big cats that are jerks, lionesses are just as terrible.
Uh-huh.
So lionesses were observed killing doves, even though they had no need for the dove meat because they were like neck deep in an elephant carcass.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
They were clearly not hungry because they had just finished gorging themselves on this elephant carcass. And a flock of doves landed nearby and they paused to admire the beauty and elegance of these doves. And it's like, one of them is just like, I'm going to kill him.
Oh.
So they start jumping around, playing with these doves, trying to snatch them out of the air. And there was no need to do this. Absolutely no need.
Hmm.
One of them caught a dove and killed it and was just like, that was fun.
This is bad.
I mean, it's the same thing as when your cat, who is fully fed, goes out and kills a bird and disembowels it and doesn't eat it because it's just fun.
It's just fun to kill, I guess.
Yeah.
Now I don't like cats.
Well, here's a fun revenge story. So sometimes your food will play back and it will be really annoying. So there is this video of a hippo playing with a crocodile. Now, typically, adult hippos are not on a crocodile's menu because they are big and they are scary, and you should be scared of hippos.
Yeah.
They will mess you up.
That's what I've heard.
They are not kidding around.
No.
Yeah, they'll chase you, and they kill a lot of people.
Okay.
More, I think they kill more people than...
Any other animal?
No.
Oh.
No.
I'm going to tell everyone.
No. I mean, the number one killer is probably mosquitoes, actually.
Oh, God.
Because of diseases. But no, they kill a handful of people every year, but they're not super dangerous. They're just more dangerous than, like, if you're afraid of, I think, lions. I think they kill more people than lions, maybe.
Okay.
Essentially, even if you're a crocodile, you don't want to mess around with adult hippos.
Mm-hmm.
But hippo calves are soft and squishy and delicious, apparently, if you're a crocodile.
Okay.
But there is a video of a hippo calf who is maybe a little too much of a mouthful for this crocodile, and she just tortures this crocodile, plays with it, and she's not being aggressive. She doesn't show any like signs of aggression or fear or territorialness. She's just having fun. So she chases the crocodile around, tugs on its tail, romps around, wrestles with it, and the crocodile keeps trying to escape. And
whoa, this is a bold little hippo baby.
I know, it's really funny because, and so the crocodile is surrounded by other hippos too, so it's probably thinking like, I can't do anything without getting completely destroyed.
Right.
So it doesn't try attacking the hippo, it just keeps trying to get away from this playful little hippo. And so here's the hippo. And it's really just really interested in the crocodile. And the crocodile seems less than thrilled, keeps trying to get away.
I know.
And
this crocodile's just yelping, like, please, please. Go away. Come on. Leave me alone.
Yeah, and it's pretty funny. It just, like, keeps torturing it, runs around, like plays with it underwater, pulls it underwater, and rolls around.
Oh, this crocodile.
It's just hanging. It's like, you're my new best friend. And this crocodile's like, please, no.
So over it. Like, wow, even on land, I thought I could escape. Mm-hmm, and nope.
Sniffing his butt.
Get out of here.
So it's like literally just like pulling on its tail. It's kind of funny to see because you think of crocodiles as being these ruthless killers. But really, they're kind of wimps when they know that the tables could easily be turned against them.
Yeah, I like to see that bothered crocodile. Yeah.
And the croc only got to escape when a herd of elephants showed up and chased off the hippo, probably because the hippo was being really annoying.
Yeah, probably.
There's this other really cute thing where, I mean, hippos are bold. So there's a photo of a hippo just kind of like sniffing around a hyena.
Oh, boy.
Booping its nose. And it's usually, what's interesting to me, too, is that these are young hippos. So they're more curious.
Sure.
And this young hyena and this young hippo were just kind of sniffing at each other. They're naturally not really friends because hyenas, I don't think typically go after fully grown hippos because that would be a very bad idea.
It's a bad matchup there.
It's bad. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not going to work out in their favor, but definitely a little baby hippo would be more their style.
Yeah.
And they work as a pack, so they can take down things that are pretty big. But yeah, it is funny that you've got these two guys that are kind of natural enemies in a sense, but they're so young, they don't know.
They don't know. It's Fox and the Hound.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, that was a sad movie.
Really was.
I don't understand why she didn't just, like, murder her neighbor, the old lady who had to get rid of her fox.
That's what she should have done.
Well, right, because, like, he keeps trying to shoot her fox. Like,
he does. Then, but like, he's like, why have a fox as a pet?
Well, then she just shoots him and is like, oops, I thought you were a fox, wink, wink, as he's dying.
Right.
Much better ending. That was a screwed up movie.
It was.
Because doesn't it end with the fox makes friends with the hound when they're both puppies, or yep. And a kit and a puppy.
And they have to kill each other.
Right. And then, like, he goes hunting. The old man that owns the hound goes hunting, and the hound that used to be his friend is like, oh, but I have to kill you because I'm... It's like, no, you don't.
You don't have to.
You don't have to. And then it just ends with them, I guess, sort of deciding not to kill each other. Yeah. But then
the older dog dies.
Yeah, the older dog dies.
Or gets injured, no one dies, right? Because then they show him at the end, and they're like, this is a Disney movie. The dogs are just in casts.
The dog has a cast.
The dog has, like, a leg cast and walks on crutches.
Signed it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
The fox signs it, like, I know you're trying to kill me for sport, but hope you feel better soon.
Exactly.
Don't break a leg. Oh, you already did.
Bum, bum, bum.
Womp, womp. Do you have any fun play stories? Do you have any pets or any kind of like fun playtime stories?
Let's see. Well, I guess this is normal dog stuff, but my dog rips up all of his stuffed animals. But yes. Here's the fun fact. I have a one-eyed dog, and I was putting his toys away. This is like a couple months ago, and I found three of his toys where he'd bitten one eye off of each toy. I was like, this is great.
Does it?
You're a one-eyed dog. You can go. Yeah, I have pictures of it that I can show you.
I think I saw you posted this.
Oh,
on
yeah,
Twitter.
I was on Twitter. I was like, my one-eyed dog bit one eye out of all of
his
toys.
That's crazy. Is it always the same eye?
No.
Oh, your dog's so stupid. Jeez,
yeah, he can't even be consistent
doesn't
pattern.
Doesn't even know what is right from his left. What an idiot. That is interesting.
Yeah.
You think he has? Do you think it's like some kind of like body relation thing where it's like, no, I only have one eye. So
everyone else must, too.
Has he ever, like, made a go at you? Like, see you have two eyeballs, human. Let's see if we can't fix that.
He has played with my parents' dog, and there was a moment where, like, they got too tired of chasing each other, and they were just both laying down, and my dog was, like, licking my parents' dog's eyeball. And I was like, huh. And I thought that was, Elvis, you better take care of this.
This is like an M. Night...
I don't know when you'll lose this.
This is like an M. Night Shyamalan movie where it's the dog, it has one eye, but then it goes insane and decides everyone must have one eye.
I think that's what's going on with my dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Or he's playful.
Oh, you're a playful good boy. He was like, I must steal the eyeballs.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, you're a good boy. The eyeballs will be mine, master.
He's got a big fixation on eyeballs. Sometimes I catch him looking at himself in the mirror like he didn't remember that he's just got the one and he stares.
I have one eye. I must correct this situation with my toys.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
It's pretty wild.
That's pretty crazy.
Oh, no.
Dogs are smart. Dogs are...
They are.
Uncannily smart, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dog, her claim to fame is she likes to fart as soon as she sits in your lap. Kind of claiming you.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I mean, I don't like the idea of a dog trying to, like, de-eyeball everything it comes across in.
Okay.
But, you know, judge my dog
I'm
for
judging
farting.
Your fart
judge
dog.
Judge my fart dog, sure. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. You got anything to plug? Can people follow you on things? Can they look at you?
Yes. Yeah, if you want to see this dog photo, I think I pinned it on Twitter, so go @childclown_, because someone else had to be childclown and they won't let me have it. Or on Instagram @childclown also.
Great. Got any shows or anything?
I got shows if you want to come by to UCB in Los Angeles. I perform on the Herald Team Leroy, so check the schedule and come check us out.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us online, as always, on the internet, creaturefeaturepod.com, creaturefeaturepod on Instagram, creaturefeetpod on Twitter. That's F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. The other one was very different. Thank you so much for listening to this here dang old podcast. If you're enjoying it, please subscribe, download, press the stars, all those buttons down, buttons and whistles and gizmos, and that actually really helps us out when you leave a rating and a comment and subscribe. It's a free way to boost us. Boost us in the algo, you guys. Thanks to the Space Cossacks for their super spooktacular song, Exolumina. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. See you next Wednesday. Crowboarding.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.